833-224-8000 or visit themichigancatholic.com.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
We're American, greatest country on the planet.
America is already gone. We have seen the globalist preparations.
You can't save America if you won't build the church.
I thought you agreed, you said.
I have a plan that cannot fail.
Papa.
Build the church, bless the nation.
Let's put it to a vote.
The kingdom of God is not a democracy.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
I relish every moment I have to listen to you, Cal.
I like you already.
My favorite program to be on.
That's such a great question. I'm so glad somebody's asking this.
That's an extremely insightful question, Al.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Good luck for both of our sakes.
Here we go.
Welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Nick Tom, executive producer of the program and your host over the next few days of the countdown of the top interviews of 2014. We have cracked the top 10 yesterday. Now we're going to get to number 9 on the countdown this hour. But first, let me do a little bit of a recap of where we have been over the past few days. I'm just going to give you the segment titles and the guests, so you will have to go to the Cresta Guest Archive or the podcast or the blog to satisfy your intrigue as to more information about these. So let's go. Number 40, Gimme Shelter, a film based on the life and work of Kathy DiFiore. She joined us. At number 39, Appletopia, the book Appletopia by Brett Robinson. Number 38, Reactions to the Hobby Lobby Victory Against the HHS Mandate with Michael Gorman and Robert Destro. Number 37, Fighting Mad, Practical Solutions for Conquering Anger with Dr. Ray Guarendi. Number 36, Community and Culture in the New Evangelization with Bishop Earl Boyer of the Diocese of Lansing. Number 35, Creating the Optimal Embryo, It's Not a Thing of the Future with Dr. Vincent Fortenays. Number 34, Cresta comments, the new divorce phrase, conscious uncoupling, is dangerous, it's ignorant, and it's untrue. And number 33, Hope for the Inner City, a testimony, Ismael Hernandez was the guest. And number 32, The War on Humans with Wesley Smith. Number 31, the film Mother Teresa. Actress Olivia Hussey joined us. At number 30, Evangelizing Catholics, a Mission Manual for the New Evangelization with Dr. Scott Hahn. Matthew Bunsen joined us at number 29, live from Rome, what you need to know about Popes John the 23rd and John Paul II. Of course, their canonizations. At number 28, a commentary Al gave on saying good things about sinners. At number 27, the autobiography A Voice Undefeated with Colin Ray. Number 26, The Lone Survivor, The Man Behind the Movie with Marcus Luttrell. At number 25, Warren Smith talked about Prodigal Press, confronting the anti-Christian bias of the American news media. At number 24, Is There a Catholic Way to Overcome Depression? Dr. Aaron Curiarty was the guest. At number 23, Peter Herbeck, the topic St. Francis Used Words. At number 22, we did this on Earth Day 2014. It was a column on the papal edition of Earth Day. G. Tracy Meehan was the guest. At number 21, Regensburg Vindicated. Is Pope Benedict XVI a prophet? That was with guest Robert Riley. Number 20, Tensions in Hong Kong. Is another Tiananmen Square on the horizon with David Aikman? At number 19, Dr. John Haas and Dr. Paul Byrne debated brain death. At number 18, Heaven is for Real. The real-life Todd Burpo joined us, who is Colton's father. Number 17, Tim Staples and his book, Behold Your Mother, A Biblical and Historical Defense of Marian Doctrine. At number 16, Natural Law, My Jewish Conversion and Changes in Academics. That was Hadley Arkus. At number 15, What's Really Going On at the Synod? Matthew Bunsen joined us on that. Luke Zamperini at number 14, he is the son of the unbroken hero. Hope you saw the movie over the weekend. At number 13, Abuse of Discretion, the Inside Story of Roe versus Wade. Clark Forsythe, the guest. At number 12, The Glory of the Crusades, historian Steve Weidenkampf. At number 11, Al reacted to the CIA torture slash enhanced interrogation techniques And at number 10, from the plantation to the pulpit, a former sharecropper reflects on the Ferguson riots, the New York chokehold case, and race relations in America. But right now, number 9 on the countdown, Jennifer Fulweiler, Something Other Than God, How I Passionately Sought Happiness and Accidentally Found It, coming at number 9 on the countdown right after this break.
Ecumenism at its finest was recently on display at the Vatican, where dozens of faith leaders from all over the world came together to remind us all of the wonderful differences and complementarity of men and women in marriage and parenthood. For parents in particular, the differences are obvious. My wife and I have 8 children under our roof. The girls can sing and dance before they can walk. The boys hate singing and dancing. And don't tell me that if my wife and I had given our daughters G.I. Joes from infancy that they'd be dying to join the Marines. And I assure you that my boys never had anything but contempt for their sisters' Barbie dolls. A year or so ago, my 7-year-old son declared himself Wolf Boy. Neither my wife or I came up with that one, and she will tell you adamantly that she did not give birth to a wolf boy. He alone transmogrified himself into this half-beast, half-boy. Wolf Boy sauntered around our house, praying, howling. It got to be a little bit too much. My wife attempted to keep him at, shall we say, bay. Fortunately, the wolf boy thing eventually cooled. One afternoon, he shoved 2 chopsticks in his throat as mock fangs. Wolf Boy had to be rushed to the hospital. We've since had several full moons with no reappearances. Of course, Wolf Boy's sisters, including the one who likes to be called Princess Cupcake, find all this amusing. But, needless to say, none of them has ever contemplated becoming Wolf Girl. And that brings me back to my main point here, the differences in the sexes. Mothers and fathers, like their sons and daughters, are remarkably but necessarily different. And what could possibly compel people to deny this? The answer is culture, ideology, politics, agendas. In the 1970s, radical feminism prompted many to reject these stereotypes of the genders. Today, gay marriage advocates do the same, insisting that it doesn't matter if children are raised in a dad-dad or mom-mom or dad-mom household. Well, that's nonsense. There's a difference, a big one, as different as the genders. For Ave Maria Radio, I'm Paul Kengor. Check out my writings at faithandfreedom.com.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. St. Albert the Great Parish in Dearborn Heights invites you to the Infant of Prague Triduum, January 10th through the 12th. Father Ben Ludke will conduct this 3-day devotion to the Infant of Prague, which will include Mass each day with special homilies, benediction, rosary, and more. For further details, call 313-770-3203. Join Ave Maria Radio host Al Cresta on Wednesday, January 14th at St. Patrick's Church in Brighton. Nearing the anniversary of Roe versus Wade, Al will be discussing the aftermath of legalized abortion and what we can do to affect change. A Q&A session will follow his presentation. Call 661-805-3655 for more information. You can find many more events and enter your own events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077. Catholic Radio, it's yours to keep and to grow.
The best.
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 Of Cresta in the Afternoon Countdown. Number 9.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. It's great to be with you, and I'm delighted to have with me right now Jennifer Fulweiler. She is a writer who has chronicled her experiences, faith, and family life on her popular blog, conversiondiary.com. She has written articles which appear in America, Our Sunday Visitor, Envoy, National Review Online. She's been a guest on many programs, including Fox and Friends, The Choices We Face, Life on the Rock. She and her husband, Joe, live in Texas with their 6 young children, and she's finally got her story chronicled in the book, Something Other Than God, How I Passionately Sought Happiness and Accidentally Found It. Jennifer, great to have you here. Thanks.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
Well, you were raised by a father who was an atheist, if I remember correctly, and a mother who was somehow agnostic but had some measure of respect for at least the Bible because she didn't want you to cut it up.
Right, right. She is one of those people, and still is, who has the philosophy of, you know, let's just try to be good people. And maybe there's a God, maybe there's not a God. There probably is, but let's not worry about it. Let's be good people. That's her outlook. And she did have that cultural respect for religion that, you know, when I cut up the Bible when I was a kid, yeah, she said, you know, you don't do that. This book is important to other people. So that was kind of her perspective.
You start off the book by talking about an experience at summer camp in East Texas. Just quickly chronicle that for us because it's painful to read.
So what happened was a bunch of the kids in my neighborhood, I lived in Dallas in kind of the buckle of the Bible Belt, and a bunch of the kids in my neighborhood went to this camp, which was a very popular camp to go to. And it had been described to me and to my parents as a general camp where you just do horseback riding and swimming and stuff like that. And it was run by Christians, but the way it was explained to us, it's just, you know, it was mainly just a camp that so happened to be run by Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents thought it would be okay for me to go. And, you know, there we did do water skiing, we did do horseback riding, but I was not prepared for just how religious it was. And so I had this counselor corner me in front of a bunch of girls, with all the girls in my cabin, you know, arrayed around her. And, you know, I'm a young girl, I want to fit in with them. And she told me point blank that I was going to burn in hell forever if I did not accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And she put me on the spot in front of everyone and asked me if I would get saved. And it was a perplexing thing to me because, you know, she never bothered to tell me who Jesus Christ was. I mean, I'd heard the name, but, you know, I didn't know anything about him. So it was a very awkward situation for me.
Well, this is something that people wonder if such stories are true. And I keep saying, yeah. These things do happen.
Yeah.
Our brothers and sisters sometimes are just clueless when it comes to the nature of relationships and how you persuade and the kind of space that you grant people, for heaven's sake. Did you feel that you were, did you suspect that religious people were preventing you from being the young lady you should be?
I think I definitely felt that. You know, keep in mind, this was very much the Bible Belt, and this was the 80s. And so I think that what you see, I think what an anthropologist would say if they were to look back at this time period, is that the Protestant Christian religion that I grew up around had become, in some ways, for some people, more of a social identifier.
Right.
And, you know, when we moved to the neighborhood, the first question was always, now, where do you guys worship? What church do y'all go to?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't so much about deepening your relationship with Christ, not for everyone, but for some people. It was more about they wanted to know which clique in the neighborhood that you were going to be involved in. And so I was kind of a pebble in the shoe of this community and at my elementary school, because we didn't, you know, I think it did bother them that we didn't believe, but there was also this element of they did not know how to categorize us socially.
right. No, I remember I was running Christian bookstores at the time, and we used to have large national conventions down in Dallas. And I can remember being shocked when I got down there. This is before I was a Catholic. But I can remember there were six or seven Christian radio stations, evangelical Protestant radio stations there that were actually, you know, getting big Arbitron numbers and Arbitron ratings at the time. And I thought, good heavens, I'm from, you know, I'm from Detroit. We don't do that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, it was huge. I mean, it was just assumed that everybody was a Christian and a churchgoer. And so I think there was also an element of they just didn't know what to do with us. I mean, you didn't admit to being an atheist in that place and
right.
in that time. And so it had very real social repercussions for me.
Now, were you able to associate with other atheists? Was there a hidden underground cabal?
No, there weren't any. No, I mean, I was really pretty sure that I was the only one. I did manage to associate, and I mentioned this in the book. There were a couple of other kids who went to families, they belonged to families who didn't go to church, but
mm-hmm.
their families at least owned a Bible and professed
okay.
Christianity. So I did kind of fall in with them, but even among them, they thought it was a little weird that we didn't even own a Bible. That was very unusual back then.
Did as you got older in the high school, did you develop any strong intellectual interests?
You know, for me, as a high school student, my intellectual interest was, you know, how to be popular and,
yes.
you know.
Well, that's not unusual.
On the Machiavellian maneuverings of my friends.
Right.
But no, I would definitely say that as I got to college, I was very interested in, physics and the sciences.
Okay.
I went to college thinking I would be a mechanical engineer,
wow.
and I really liked that. I loved, I eventually worked as a programmer, and I loved that, the logic and the groundedness of those kind of pursuits. And that was very comfortable to me as an atheist, that everything is very provable and repeatable and predictable. That was a great fit for me.
Okay, so how does that fit in with black lipstick and ripped fishnet stockings and,
right.
and green hair, by the way?
Well, you know what's interesting is I often think back on that phase of my life when I had the nose ring and the green hair and the black lipstick, and I think in a way it was directly leading me to Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
When I think back on that time in my life, I feel a direct connection to the way I feel now as a Catholic, which sounds very counterintuitive. But what I mean by that is that I looked around at our culture and the quote-unquote truths about, you know, human life and what it means to be a good person and what the meaning of life is
mm-hmm.
that I was seeing in our culture. And something within me said, this is wrong. This is false. And our culture is leading people, especially women, completely the wrong direction. And so that the fishnet and the black lipstick and all that, the message that I was trying to send is like, I don't want any part of what you guys, you know, mainstream secular culture, I don't want any part of what you guys are doing.
You call yourself civilized, but you're not really civilized.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Something told me that there is a lot of falsehood here
yeah.
that is being passed off as truth. And so I feel like becoming Catholic, in a way, was the fulfillment of what I was searching for when I was in the rich fishnet and black lipstick phase.
Yeah, yeah, that's fascinating. I was a 60s kid, and I had similar attitudes mocking the mainstream culture at the time because I just thought it was incredibly hypocritical and it didn't follow through on its basic assumptions and basic its basic logic. But let me...
Exactly.
We're going to have to take a break, but I want to come back, and I love the exchange when you meet your future husband and as you get to know one another. I think that this is, I think for listeners, it's fascinating because he has had a religious experience that was important enough for him to tell you about. You didn't take it too well to begin with, but I'd like you to set that up for us when we come back, okay?
Great.
Jennifer Fulweiler, my guest, Something Other Than God, How I Passionately Sought Happiness and Accidentally Found It. I love the book, and I recommend it to you. We're going to come back and continue conversation. I'm Al Cresta.
The best.
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 Best. Of Cresta in the Afternoon Countdown.
Number 9.
Ecumenism at its finest was recently on display at the Vatican, where dozens of faith leaders from all over the world came together to remind us all of the wonderful differences and complementarity of men and women in marriage and parenthood. For parents in particular, the differences are obvious. My wife and I have 8 children under our roof. The girls can sing and dance before they can walk. The boys hate singing and dancing. And don't tell me that if my wife and I had given our daughters G.I. Joes from infancy that they'd be dying to join the Marines. And I assure you that my boys never had anything but contempt for their sisters' Barbie dolls. A year or so ago, my 7-year-old son declared himself Wolf Boy. Neither my wife or I came up with that one, and she will tell you adamantly that she did not give birth to a wolf boy. He alone transmogrified himself into this half-beast, half-boy. Wolf Boy sauntered around our house, praying, howling. It got to be a little bit too much. My wife attempted to keep him at, shall we say, bay. Fortunately, the wolf boy thing eventually cooled. One afternoon, he shoved 2 chopsticks in his throat as mock fangs. Wolf Boy had to be rushed to the hospital. We've since had several full moons with no reappearances. Of course, Wolf Boy's sisters, including the one who likes to be called Princess Cupcake, find all this amusing. But, needless to say, none of them has ever contemplated becoming Wolf Girl. And that brings me back to my main point here, the differences in the sexes. Mothers and fathers, like their sons and daughters, are remarkably but necessarily different. And what could possibly compel people to deny this? The answer is culture, ideology, politics, agendas. In the 1970s, radical feminism prompted many to reject these stereotypes of the genders. Today, gay marriage advocates do the same, insisting that it doesn't matter if children are raised in a dad-dad or mom-mom or dad-mom household. Well, that's nonsense. There's a difference, a big one, as different as the genders. For Ave Maria Radio, I'm Paul Kengor. Check out my writings at faithandfreedom.com.
This Ave Maria Radio program is brought to you in part by St. Gregory Retreat Centers, the new standard for recovery. St. Gregory Retreat Centers offers substance abuse treatment options using traditional Catholic teaching about virtue and access to daily Mass and reconciliation, combined with the latest evidence-based practices in substance abuse. More information is available at 888-778-5833 or online at stgregoryctr.com.
Hi, Deacon Tom here with a reminder that Christmas is just around the corner and Ave Maria Radio has some terrific gift ideas for you. Books by our hosts and our guests, recordings on CD, and our new Wi-Fi radios so you can listen to Catholic radio anywhere in the world, anytime you want, as long as you have a Wi-Fi connection. Just go to our website and click the word store on the right side of the page, just below the EWTN logo. It's an easy way to shop and you can help Catholic radio at the same time. The website can be found at AveMariaRadio.net.
The Ave Maria CD library continues to grow. We just sponsored our first conference, Catholic Witness in a Nation Divided. Session topics included immigration, pro-life witness, religious liberty, and redefinition of marriage. Speakers, aside from our own Al Crest and Teresa Tomeo, included Deal Hudson, the USCCB's Kevin Appleby, Father Frank Pavone, Notre Dame's Gerald Bradley, Dick Thompson, and William May. Individual CDs are available, and the 6-CD set is $57. An MP3 CD of the conference is $32.50. All editions of Crest in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, Christ is the Answer, Putting on the Mind of Christ, The Doctor is In, and More to Life are also available. All single talks and programs are on high-quality CDs that are $9.50 each, including sales tax and postage. To place your order for one of these titles or to inquire about a talk topic of interest to you, call 734-930-4506 or write orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Let's continue here on Crest in the Afternoon with our countdown of the top 40 interviews of 2014. Number 9, Jennifer Fulweiler and her testimony.
The best.
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 Of Crest in the Afternoon countdown.
Number 9.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me is Jennifer Fulweiler. You may know her from her very popular blog, ConversionDiary.com. And talking about her book, which we've awaited for a long time, it's called Something Other Than God, How I Passionately Sought Happiness and Accidentally Found It. When did you meet Joe? How old were you?
I was 23, okay. I think, at that time. Fairly newly out of college.
Okay. And he comes to the company you work for with a pretty good reputation, as I remember it.
Yes, yes. I think the people who were at the company didn't necessarily like him. They thought we thought he was going to fire us all, but certainly he had an absolutely, you know, top-notch resume. Nobody could argue with that.
Mm-hmm. Two of you end up getting together socially. Did that surprise you?
It did, because, you know, he was one of these guys. I worked with a bunch of, you know, Ivy League careerist guys, and he was the most Ivy League, most careerist of them all.
Yeah.
And so I thought that I wouldn't make the cut, you know, that my resume didn't have enough accolades on it to warrant even having a cup of coffee with him. So I was very surprised when we ended up actually going to coffee and hanging out socially.
If I remember right, when you, shortly after you met him or even saw him, you had a sense that you were going to marry him.
Yeah, it was the strangest thing. And this is the kind of thing that, as an atheist, I had no lexicon.
Well, my next question was, yeah, how did you process that?
Well, yeah, okay, so what happened was I was sitting there in a meeting. I had heard that this guy was coming. I was ready to not like him because I was sure he was going to fire me because, you know, I didn't go to Princeton and Yale and Harvard like all my other coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just ready to be hostile to this guy. he walks in, and we're at this long meeting table. He's the new guy. There are a couple seats on the side of the table, and then one seat at the head of the table is open. He sits himself down at the head of the table, and I was kind of smirking at that. And I heard the words. I literally heard the words in my mind, "You are going to marry him." And I thought, I kind of instinctively looked around like, who said, wait, where did that come from? Who said that? And it was the strangest moment. And yeah, as an atheist, I thought, man, my subconscious is doing really weird things today. Because
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
of course I had to believe it was all completely from within my own brain.
Sure.
So
sure.
Yeah, it was a very strange and kind of dizzying experience.
When did you, how long before the two of you began seeing one another socially and you got to know one another a little bit better?
It was about a year. We were both so focused on our career that neither one of us ever made, having a relationship, any real relationships, friendship or otherwise, a priority. So it took about a year before we actually began dating.
Was your atheism deepening at that time? Because the book has the great Bertrand Russell passage, which is one of the most powerful atheistic passages ever written about the what atheism ends up leading to. All the noonday
right.
brightness of human genius is destined to extinction. Were you deepening in your atheism at that time?
No, I wasn't. Because what had happened is before then, when I really, it was in college and earlier in life, when I had really, really thought through atheism and fully followed a purely atheist materialist view to all of its conclusions, I came down on the side of Bertrand Russell that fatalism was really the only
right.
Logical conclusion there. That I not all atheists agree with this, but I was of the atheist bent that thought
yeah.
I would have said, yeah, you're right, there is no meaning. I don't know why we get out of bed each morning.
Yeah.
I do think the human life ultimately amounts to nothing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to live your life in that mentality.
Absolutely.
And so I actually kind of willfully decided I just can't think about this because, literally it was leading me to a very suicidal,
right.
Thought pattern, which sounds crazy, but it seemed perfectly logical to me. And so I thought, I don't want to go down this path of suicide, so I need to just not think about this. And so I had actively chosen to just throw myself in my career. And in a way, by that point, I did have a religion, and that was the religion of success and money and status.
Okay. Okay. I think when I see atheists who are kind of village-type atheists who are smiling and goofy, I think they've not really thought through the consequences of their atheism. I think it was,
right.
was it Camus who said the only real philosophical question is why not commit suicide? And,
exactly. Yeah. And it's funny, when I say that now, I end up with 100 comments from atheists telling me I'm an idiot. But what's interesting is I believed that as an atheist, and I would be frustrated with my fellow atheists who would say, we're secular humanists, and
yeah.
oh, life is beautiful, and I'd say, it's not. It's bleak. We're like walking dust, guys. We come from nothing. We're destined for nothing. There's nothing beautiful about this situation.
Yeah.
So I absolutely thought that when I was an atheist.
Have you had a chance to, have you come across the writings of John Gray, a book called Straw Dogs, where he maintains that secular humanism is really just a bankrupt form of Christianity, and he's a thoroughgoing atheist himself. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet, but I should, because I agree with that point now, and I would have agreed with it when I was an atheist.
Yeah, it's bracing. It's a bracing read. Anyways, it's called Straw Dogs, so he's got a few things out there, but that's one of them. And I know you're busy, but I'm just saying that's one of those, that's one of those odd books that stands out in my mind.
Yeah.
Well, talk to me about when Joe, you have this exchange going. You get into kind of a religious conversation, and you let him know you're an atheist, and he says something like, yeah, I think you mentioned that once. Now, he does mention that he'd been baptized, I think, at age 13, and that something
right.
happened there. How did you hear that?
I cut him off. You'll see in the book, I interrupted him and said, in so many words, I kind of said, I don't want to hear this, because I respected him, and I thought of him as intelligent and reasonable, and it was very off-putting to me to hear him talk about supernatural experiences, because by in this point in my life, I had only atheist friends. We only ever, you know, we were very grounded in, you know, only experiences that can be sort of verified and right. proven in the material world, and we were very distrustful of subjective personal experience, mm-hmm. and so there was almost a sense of, you know, am I dating a crazy man? Like, what is this talk about encounters with spirits? Like, oh, this is freaking me out.
And he didn't push it, though.
No.
Okay.
He didn't care enough to push it.
Okay.
Because, you know, like I said, we in a way, we shared the same religion at that time, even though he was a lukewarm Christian and I was a militant atheist. We both worshipped at the idol of, you know, the sort of quote-unquote American dream of money and the fancy car and the fancy house. I mean, that in practice, that was our shared religion.
Sure. That's the way it functioned for you. You go on, you get married, you have a child, and what happens to open you up to the plausibility that maybe there's something more than atheism?
It was really, you know, look, the experience of motherhood. It was a tricky road because on the one hand, I knew as an atheist who was, you know, trained by my father to think through these things very rigorously, I knew that I would be incentivized to want to believe that my child was very valuable and, you know, that the love that I felt for him was really mattered in the grand scheme of things. And so at first I thought, maybe I just want to believe in some sort of spirituality because I want to believe that my son is more valuable than just a, you know, randomly evolved set of chemical reactions. But as I looked at this child and as I went through the experience of being a mother, I came to think that this love that exists mm-hmm. between us, that it comes from somewhere outside the chemical reactions in our brains. Like, it was, for a while, I had begun to think that a strictly atheist materialist view, you know, where there is absolutely nothing, no spirituality, you know, nothing outside of atoms and molecules, you know, that there was nothing more than that. But so becoming a mother, I think, was the first thing that made me say, you know, I don't think that's right. I think that there is some sort of spiritual realm where things like love and truth and goodness come from.
Or meaningful, yeah. Why don't, generally speaking, why don't atheists account that as evidence for theism, though? In other words, if I'm made for God, then it's not implausible that I would want to believe in God. Why doesn't that count as having some explanatory power?
I think that there is a great distrust of any experience that can't be verified in atheist circles. You know, many of us would talk about, you know, well, I think all of us to this day, I think you and I both, we know people who have some crazy spiritual beliefs.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
definitely.
They'll say, like, oh, I here in Austin, you know, we have everything under the sun, you know, in terms of beliefs. And you hear people talk about, like, the earth goddess was, you know, revealing things to them about
right.
the moon spirits. And so to atheists, we would take that as proof that, you know, sometimes people have emotions that they confuse as being from something else or, you know, something outside of themselves, when really it seemed to us anyway, like, I think that's y'all just talking to yourselves.
Yeah, okay.
You know? And so I think that was why we never counted that sort of thing as evidence for theism. You know, like when I heard the voice saying that I was going to marry Joe, or when, you know, I would have an experience of love, I would just think that's an emotion. I can't prove it. There's no way to prove that this is not just me feeling things. There's no way to prove the spiritual. We were so, you know, grounded in this idea that everything must be able to be measured and proved scientifically. We were unmoored from this sense that, you know, you can actually know things in life that cannot be proven in a laboratory.
Exactly.
We had no sense of that.
Yeah, okay. Well, when you have some kind of theism here, when do you actually move on towards Christianity? How soon after the birth of Donald?
You know, it was actually quite a while later, because what happened is when I first had that experience of the, you know, the thinking that there must be something else, I said a prayer. And having grown up in the Bible Belt, I was somewhat familiar with prayer. I mean, I didn't know how to do it. I would say, you know, how do you initiate contact with God? I have no idea. So, but I tried, you know, kind of saying, if there's anyone or anything out there, I'm open to it. And I thought that the way prayer works is that if there is a God out there, he hops to it. He starts doing stuff at
right.
your command.
He's like the bellboy. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Hop, hop. Get over here. Like, I'm praying.
Jennifer, hold it there. I've got to take a break. We'll come back and pick it up from there. My guest is Jennifer Fulweiler. The book, Something Other Than God, How I Passionately Sought Happiness and Accidentally Found It. I'm Al Cresta.
The best.
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 Of Crest in the Afternoon Countdown.
Number 9.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Dunhut-Garmo, co-publisher and editor-in-chief of the Chaldean News. It's a news magazine for the Chaldean community, about the Chaldean community, and for anyone who wants to engage the Chaldean community. As Christians from Iraq, Chaldeans are proud supporters of Ave Maria Catholic Radio. We invest many hours into this monthly news magazine to keep you invested in the community. You can subscribe or advertise today. Contact us at www.chaldeannews.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Is there only bad and worse news coming out of the United Nations? You'd certainly think so. For Christmas week, let's hear some good news. This is Austin Roos of CFAM for the UN Minute. This week, CFAM publishes our annual listing of UN good news. Topping the list is the pro-family resolution passed by the Human Rights Council in Geneva. It passed overwhelmingly, though sadly President Obama was against it. Coming in second, this year UN diplomats repeatedly rejected that crazy phrase, various forms of the family, which is code for everything but the natural family. Ranking third was the defeat of the reproductive rights radicals. Their agenda didn't advance even a single syllable this year. I'll end with some personal good news. After 17 years, CFAM finally received official UN status. And it wasn't easy. The radicals tried to block us. But CFAM is now in official consultative status with the United Nations. Go figure that. This is Austin Roos of CFAM for the UN Minute. For further information, go to c-fam.org.
At a recent AIDS event, singer Elton John, a gay man married to his gay lover, called Pope Francis his hero. To rare raucous applause for a pope from a group of New York liberals, Elton John asserted, "Make this man a saint now, okay?" John continued. He said, 10 years ago, one of the biggest obstacles in the fight against AIDS was a Catholic Church. Today we have a pope that speaks out about it. Well, that's a remarkable claim. Anyway, Elton John continued, saying that Francis is, quote, a compassionate, loving man who wants everybody to be included in the love of God. It is formidable what he's trying to do against many, many people in the Church, unquote. Well, I'm pleased that Elton John likes the pope, but why does he truly like him? It's an amazing thing. The Church and its chief shepherd deal with countless matters of body, mind, and soul. And yet, to the secular culture, what matters most is what's below the waist. They can't raise their gaze above that horizon. Elton John likes Pope Francis because he thinks that Francis thinks like him on gay issues. I'm sure he's not preparing himself to accept the position of Francis and the Church on natural, traditional, biblical marriage. When he was a cardinal in Argentina, Francis declared same-sex marriage a diabolical effort of the father of lies to destroy God's plan. More recently, in widely unreported remarks after the synod, Francis remonstrated that the family is being hit, knocked, devalued, debased. Can everything be called a family? He asked. How much relativism there is in the concept of the sacrament of marriage? He condemned a crisis of the family and shouted, "What they are proposing is not marriage." The Pope decried the new forms, totally destructive, of marriage. So, I'm glad that Elton John respects and likes Pope Francis. But what is it truly that he likes? Does he really know? For Ave Maria Radio, I'm Paul Kengor. Check out my writings at faithandfreedom.com.
Let's continue here on Crest in the Afternoon with our countdown of the top 40 interviews of 2014. Number 9, Jennifer Fulweiler and her testimony.
The best.
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 Best. Of Crest in the Afternoon countdown.
Number 9.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta with Jennifer Fulweiler. She's the author of Something Other Than God, How I Passionately Sought Happiness and Accidentally Found It. Jennifer, we're back talking after the birth of your child. You begin to realize that love is something more than just hormones swirling around in your brain, and that there's more to life. But you don't immediately become a Christian. There's a considerable amount of time that goes by. When is it that you begin to move in the direction of historic Christianity?
Okay, so after I said that fumbling prayer, months passed, nothing happened. I thought I'd be agnostic forever. And then I came across this book. It's by a Protestant guy, Lee Strobel. It's called The Case for Christ.
Sure.
And an important thing to note here is that I was in a place of openness. You know, I want to give that caveat to people who recommend books, to their atheist loved ones. I could have found this book a year before and I would have laughed at it.
But
I was in a place of openness. I was open to hearing the truth. And so I came across that it actually had some compelling points to it. I was not convinced immediately. It was not the case that I read this book and said, okay, I'm convinced Jesus is who he said he was. But the point the author made is that there is enough evidence for Jesus that it's worth keeping an open mind. It's worth taking a second look. And he accomplished his goal in that sense. It got me to think I should really look further into this religion. And kind of a funny follow-up to that was I made this big announcement to Joe and said, I think there's something to this Christianity thing. I'm going to start researching it. And since he was a lukewarm Christian, I thought that would be very exciting to him. And he just kind of laughed and said, well, yeah, I guess you would start with the only major lasting world religion whose founder claimed to be God. And I thought, well, when you put it that way, I guess it does make sense.
That's good. By the way, were you blogging at that time?
Not yet. Well, actually, I was, but not about matters of faith. I had a blog where I just talked about motherhood and stuff.
Okay. So walk me through what happens after you read Lee Strobel. You begin studying more seriously? Is this a systematic study, though, that you're making?
Oh, yes. Yeah, very systematic. With my programming background, that, it was a very kind of logical research process. The next thing I did was buy a Bible. I grew up in the Bible Belt. I know about the Bible. That's the Jesus book. And so, it's hard to describe how ignorant I was of the Bible and just of what it is. And so I figured, it's a book. So you start on page one, and that's how you read it. You read it cover to cover. And I also knew that since it was the Jesus book, it must be all about Jesus. And so I thought that Jesus would probably come in on, page 50 or page 30. And so I was knee-deep in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy and Numbers. Like, I was expecting the stories about the fishermen. I was so confused. And so to make a long story short, there are all these details in the book about my confusion. But to make a long story short, it was very clear to me as someone who had no background in Bible study that this idea of picking up the Bible and knowing everything you need to know about Jesus and about how to become a Christian on your own did not work. After the first moment I bought the Bible, it was immediately clear to me that this was not going to work. Now, having grown up in the Protestant South, I didn't know there was another way. And so my take was just Christianity is a mess. There's no way to know exactly what this Bible is supposed to be teaching us. And so I guess this religion is bunk. And so I actually almost gave up on the whole Christianity thing.
Wow. What reintroduced the plausibility of it then? How did you make that transition?
This is where the blog came in. And this is, the Holy Spirit, it turns out that he even works through blogs. Who would have guessed? So I had started, because I'd alienated all the Christians in my personal life, I didn't know any people to talk to in person. So I thought, maybe I could find some Christians on the Internet. So I started this blog, and I needed people to talk to. So I actually went to atheist forums, and I identified people who could really demolish atheist arguments. These Christians who, you know, they knew more about science than the atheists. They knew more about history than the atheists. They did an amazing job of presenting their worldview as the most reasonable worldview in the world. So I handpicked them, and it turns out that all of these people that I had identified as just making mincemeat of atheism, they were all Catholic.
Wow.
And I did not intend to recruit Catholic readers. I was going only based on the strength of their arguments. So I unintentionally end up with all these Catholic readers to my blog. And so I was telling them about my fumblings with the Bible, and they told me this radical theory that they said, you know, what if when God inspired imperfect people to convey perfect truth, like he did through the writers of the Bible, they said, what if he didn't stop doing that? What if he founded a living church that, like with the Bible, uses imperfect people to convey perfect truth for to this day, for all places, for all times?
Nice.
And I thought, oh, you know, that theory really, that makes sense. And then they said they were talking about the Catholic Church, and I said, oh, no way. I couldn't become Catholic. Are you kidding?
Yeah, I don't like bourbon, you know. I mean, this is
right.
This is a little too, beer and wine, fine, but don't give me the heavy, the hard stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, how long did it take before you, what was it that, and I can, by the way, I understand fully the shock of thinking that Catholicism might be true. It took me a while to make it think that it was plausible too. But I'm wondering how then, what did they say to you? How did they bring you along? Or were you asking transparently that you wanted help? I mean, how did this go?
Yeah, what happened? I told them basically, I said, you know, I've been looking into Christianity, and it doesn't check out. I said, you know, that I don't see the standard Christian moral code. I mean, I was familiar with what the Christian moral code typically was, you know, being opposed to abortion and euthanasia and things like that. I said, I personally am not seeing this in the Bible. And when I ask questions at what Christians believe, I get as many different answers as there are people. And each person is convinced that the Bible that their claims.
And I
said, you know, on top of that, this system, this, you know, reading the Bible alone to find Christ, it requires literacy. It requires the printing press.
That's right.
You know, things that have not been around in all places and in all times, even today in some cases. And so I said, you know, this system doesn't make sense. And so the first thing they did pointed out that this crazy cat theory, it would answer all my questions. It explained how we got the Bible in the first, how we know that the canon of the Bible is correct,
right,
how people find Christ, you know, before the printing press, how illiterate people find Christ. I mean, it made a lot of sense, and that it actually had a clear moral code that wasn't a matter of public opinion, that was, you know, truth handed down from God. So all of this made sense. You know, that then I was in this tension of, that, you know, the theory sounds right, but how do you know if it's true?
Yeah. When is it that you finally get comfortable enough to say, I'm ready to, quote, convert?
So, yeah, things got really interesting because my holdout issue was the issues of abortion and contraception. I was always pro-choice, and I didn't even know that anybody was opposed to contraception. I thought it was like air or water. I mean, are there anti-water people? I mean, I didn't. This was a shocking revelation to me that Catholics had any issue there. And so, you know, I knew well enough to know that, you know, it doesn't even make sense to be a cafeteria Catholic, because if you say that you know better than the church on any particular issue, you're saying that you know better than God,
right,
or that you don't believe that God is guiding this church,
right,
in which case, why believe anything it says, starting with its claim that it chose the correct books for the canon of the Bible? So I knew that wasn't an option, that I never really considered cafeteria Catholicism. And so as I struggled with these issues, I suddenly began to realize that the church was right, that they were these teachings were absolutely true and valid, and in fact the key to women's freedom. You know, I'd always thought being pro-choice was women's freedom, but I realized that it was the church that was teaching true women's freedom.
Yeah.
And so And so, I, and interestingly, at that exact time, I ended up getting diagnosed with a blood clotting disorder that's exacerbated by pregnancy.
Okay, so that...
And I got a deep vein, yeah.
That came subsequent, though, to the realization that the church was teaching truth about Humanae Vitae?
Yes, okay. Yes, exactly. And it was actually almost at the same time. I mean, it made for a good book because all of these things happened exactly at the same time. It was like God was handing me a story.
Yeah, yes.
So I suddenly had to come face to face with how much do I believe that this is true? I mean,
wow.
I said that I thought it was true when I was reading it in the pages of a book.
Right.
But am I willing to place a huge bet on this? So I thought through it and I prayed through it in these very intense moments of receiving this very difficult diagnosis. And I realized that the church is absolutely true, and what it teaches is absolutely true, and that even in a case like mine of someone diagnosed with a very serious blood clotting disorder, and that the treatment to treat this clot that I had was, you know, you absolutely cannot get pregnant while you're taking the treatment, even in my case, a case like mine, the church is still, what it teaches is still the key to freedom, to personal freedom, to women's freedom. So anyway, when I realized all that, that is when I said, you know, I don't believe that people can do this on their own. I believe that this requires divine intervention. I see the hand of God in this church.
Hmm. Well, what did Joe say?
You know, he was right on board with me. I mean, by this point, we were absolutely in step because we were both simply trying to figure out what was true. And so, I mean, when you really set aside your biases and you get in this mode where you're willing to give everything just to know God and to know the truth, no matter what it costs you, things start to get really simple really quickly.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
And both Joe and I, we never doubted this was valid and that this was true by this point. So he was, in fact, maybe even more ahead of me in willingness to convert.
Your life, though, is on the line, right, in terms of pregnancy?
Right.
So, I mean, this is tough. This is very tough.
It was because, I mean, I had, you know, one tough thing was that I didn't have any Catholic friends. I mean, this was all still secret. I was blogging under, I didn't even use my last name. And I had a team of expert doctors surrounding me, breathing down my neck, saying, you absolutely have to use contraception. You have to get sterilized. Like, there's no choice here. You are the clear-cut case. And that was a very tough thing to go from being an atheist. You know, all my life I had prided myself on atheism. That was like my team jersey. That was my identity as a person. And so suddenly, not only was I not an atheist, not only was I religious, not only was I a Christian, but I was a fundamentalist Christian wacko in the doctor's house. And that was, you know, that, I think that leads to some kind of funny parts in the book there towards the end where, you know, I'm just like, when did this happen? I'm the crazy religious nut in the doctor's office. It's like, what's going on here?
Well, I'll tell you what, we're out of time, but we'll leave that story, the rest of the story, for listeners to get, and they have to get the book. So we'll bump those numbers up for you, Jennifer. Thank
good,
you so
good.
Much.
I love that.
Great talking
Thank
with you.
Thank you.
Jennifer Fulweiler, Something Other Than God.
The best.
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 Best. Best.
Of Cresta in the Afternoon Countdown.
Number 9.
Light of the East. Weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, in the Eastern Churches, Epiphany is the observance of the baptism of Christ. It is called Theophany, and water is blessed on these days and used to sanctify many things.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO, Ave Maria Radio.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com. Your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. St. Augustine said of Christmas, God became man so that man might become God. Christmas is about a wondrous exchange of natures. God shares our frail humanity and we share his divinity. The joy of Christmas is not just that a child is born, but that a whole new humanity is born. This new humanity is not disconnected from the old, but is radically renewed and redeemed. Just as in Adam all die, so in Christ shall all be made alive. Christmas then is about the destiny of the human person. Christ promises, I will give the victor the right to sit with me on my throne. Christmas goes far beyond the natural blessings of kindness, goodness, family, and giving. It's about the sharing of divine nature, starting right now. He who believes has eternal life. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
Back. You're listening to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Nick Tom, executive producer of the program and your host for the countdown of the top 40 interviews of 2014. Keep up with us at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Go to the Cresta guest and audio archives. You can download the podcast. You can just take a look at the information from the countdowns, information for every segment. You can look at the guests. You can look at the books that they publish. You can look at the articles that went into preparation for the program. And then the Cresta blog. You'll be able to see everything that we're blogging about. And, of course, there you can also find the countdown information. Every guest, every number in the countdown, everything. AveMariaRadio.net, the Cresta guest and audio archive, or the Cresta blog. We'll see you here tomorrow as we continue this countdown to the top interviews of 2014.
Cresta in the Afternoon is produced and distributed by Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The executive producer is Nick Tom. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Do you want a family physician who respects the inherent dignity of every human person of any age? Do you want your physician to respect parents as the primary educators of their children and not the secular culture? Sacred Heart Medical Center is a medical practice that is Christ-centered, family-oriented, and faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. With locations in Livonia and Brighton, learn more today by calling 734-338-0600. That's 734-338-0600 or at sacredheartmedical.org.
Republicans, Democrats, no matter which political party is in office, there are always investment opportunities to be found. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds won't compromise the moral beliefs of its investors. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. The portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and moral values. Call toll-free 866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-